You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, King Johnson.
Ria Menounos and Bing.com present live from the Kari Feinstein Oscar Style Lounge at the world-famous Mondrian Hotel on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, California. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Movie Edition. Tonight's AfterBuzz movie is The Iron Lady. We'll break down everything from the making of The Iron Lady to behind the scenes and everything in between. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite movie. It's AfterBuzz TV's The Iron Lady.
Well, hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another AfterBuzz TV podcast. We're coming to you from the Kari Feinstein Oscar Style Lounge Gift Suites here at the Mondrian Hotel on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California.
Hollywood.
And joining me today, we're going to be speaking about The Iron Lady. And joining me are three lovely ladies. We got Bethany Jaber, Catherine Tulich, and Courtney Stewart. So we are here for the next 2 days. By the way, this is the weekend before the 2012 Oscars, and we are a podcast thing. We'll be talking about movies. As people come through the lounge, we'll help bring them up here. We'll have interviews with them. We'll get their take on the movies. We'll get their what they liked, what they hope to win, and what they're doing next. In the meantime, we'll be breaking down The Iron Lady. So the first thing I want to ask is, wasn't it nice to see Margaret Thatcher on the big screen?
Have you always wanted to see Margaret Thatcher on the big screen?
Yes, exactly.
I love it. She was amazing. Gave me a much better view than my 7th grade history teacher.
Yeah.
Or different view. Maybe not better, but definitely different.
So. You know, for me, you know, everybody's been talking about Meryl's performance, which, of course, we'll talk about as well. But it was really hard to not, after you had seen the movie, it was really hard not to talk about the movie without talking about that performance.
Of course.
I mean,
they're almost one in the same.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist without
outside of that.
Because it is about Margaret, and it is almost eerie.
Yeah.
The way in which she transcends and becomes her.
She's nuts.
She's miraculously amazing.
She is. Okay, but before we get into the movie, let's talk a little bit about how it became a movie.
Yes.
So what was the road that it took, Courtney?
It was an interesting sort of creative path. I found that the producer, Damian Jones, was sort of inspired just from watching The Queen, and he has been wanting to do something for Margaret Thatcher and was kind of trying to figure out how he wanted to go down that way. He found his way to Abby Morgan, who wrote the screenplay, and they sort of debated back and forth how they wanted to approach it, especially with Margaret Thatcher obviously still being alive and sort of what path to take. And at first it started focusing on just the Falkland Island War, and then they sort of moved along a little bit and kind of found their way to Miss Thatcher's daughter's book that she had written about being the daughter of Margaret Thatcher, and they decided to go in a direction of showing sort of her as she is, sort of reflecting on her life in the past, and that was sort of the jump start that gave Abby the
It's different because that's totally different from how they did The Queen,
of course,
or The King's Speech,
because
those are about extensive about specific instances and things surrounding it, but this was a whole. Spanned years, decades, rather than being about something specific.
Yeah, and it was interesting that they sort of wanted to take on her as a person and sort of, they've gotten obviously a lot of criticism about how they decided to.
Exactly, which we all get into.
The screenplay.
Yeah, exactly,
They wanted to show the Iron Lady behind the Iron Lady.
That's right.
So much about it for me in connection with the Queen is point of view. Because Peter Morgan told that story through the point of view of the Queen. And here we begin with Margaret Thatcher, and she's in her later years, but it is from her point of view.
I think that's really important, because they're very much saying this is not a documentary. It's very much a work of fiction, because it is totally subjective. It's totally from Margaret Thatcher's point of view.
Yeah. And what her life might be like. Now.
Yeah, might be like now, of course. And I mean, even things like, you know, you don't see any women in the Parliament. And they're saying, well, there was, but from Margaret Thatcher's point of view, there wasn't. So things like that, there's a lot of dramatic license taken, because it really is a subjective film.
Yeah. So well, that's how it became. I'm sorry, were you going
to
say something?
To be terribly honest, I a majority of the time I find biopics offensive. Offensive? Because the filmmaker will approach it from a linear point of view, and they try to cram their entire life into an hour and a half, which is, I don't necessarily feel the film format is meant for that. Maybe something serial would be more appropriate, but I love that they're okay with just picking moments in time. They don't try to fit it all in. It's one of my favorite things about this film. It almost feels like an art piece because they're doing it from her fragmented imagination.
And also what a beautiful way to do it too, because I think, you know, it's basically 3 days in her life and she's going through her deceased husband's wardrobe and that, and little things, just little things trigger memories, and that is what makes it such a work
of
art.
Like, you don't even know if it's the memory. It's your idea of the memory.
It's an idea of memory, but you know, if anyone has ever had to do that, that is what just triggers memories, is kind of having to let go and things that trigger parts of your past. And that's what I think is such a beautiful key into this film.
Right. So that's how it became a film. And, of course, casting. Well, if you had your druthers... And you can get anybody to play.
And think of anyone other than Meryl Streep to play this.
Yeah. I can't even imagine.
No, I know.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, I mean, you could have gone, I guess, for an unknown person, right? Maybe. There's probably great British actors out there. But what I liked about what the director said, Phyllida Law, who also did Mamma Mia, so she's got a great relationship.
That was her first feature to direct.
Great relationship with Meryl.
She directed in stage and opera and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Her first feature was Mamma Mia.
Yeah, exactly.
Huge, 400 million. Like 500 million or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
And working with Meryl. So I guess that's a nice way in for the next one.
Exactly. So. But she did say, you know, first of all, portraying Margaret Thatcher is going to be a lightning rod because she's loved and hated. And then she said getting Meryl Streep to play Margaret Thatcher could be another lightning rod. But she felt like in the end that you needed a superstar to play what was essentially a superstar. Yeah. So I like that choice. You know, instead of going for an unknown, going for someone that really pull this off.
I read just a little bit about what kind. There wasn't seem to be that much backlash of using an American.
Yeah.
I wonder if there'd be more backlash if it wasn't Meryl Streep. Because everybody goes, well, at least she got Meryl.
Yeah,
right. You know what I mean?
I think there might have been. I mean, because it's kind of like you got Meryl Streep. Okay, you at least got the best.
Exactly.
I know. Well, the BAFTAs gave her an award, so I guess that's the British saying that
there was
we're happy
nod.
You did Margaret Thatcher.
It's okay.
We
like
you.
Right.
We like you. Yeah.
I think the fact that she wanted a superstar to play a superstar, I get that when she said that, I went, she's right.
Yeah, exactly. But I liked Meryl actually talking about taking on this role. You know, she said that she was, I mean, even that, come on, this woman has taken on Aussie and Evil Angel. She's taken on so many amazing kind of roles and from different countries. But she said that she was really nervous because, especially some of the first scenes walking into the parliament, she was confronted with like 35 British actors
that really knew
Margaret Thatcher, that really knew the history. And she said that she felt really intimidated, but she said that the director liked that because in the fact that Margaret Thatcher was also an outsider.
Would have felt the same thing.
Would have felt the same way. She would have felt just as intimidated walking into that group of men. So that sort of, she
with
brought
something
that
to prove
to
and
exactly.
justification and all that other stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah. But the other thing I liked about what Meryl Streep is that she sort of saw it on a personal level as well because she'd recently lost her parents.
Yeah.
And she's also had experience with dementia in her family as well. So she took this very personally in the way that, you know, looking at how people age, looking at people, how they lose things and that. And I think that's, for her, was more the key to this than actually portraying this famous politician.
Right. And I read that one quote that she was really interested in playing a part that dealt with, quote, the end of things, end quote. Which I thought was, first of all, this is a great way to say it.
Yes.
And then I went, and that was her way in, and her, the whole, for me anyway, as I read that, that's why she did it.
I know.
Dealt with that. And I'm sure it could be coming off the parents and all that other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, those scenes, you know, like when she's in the store in the beginning, and the way she's... creates that really old person, I think, is amazing because the director was considering 3 actresses in the beginning. So, as you know, that we have a younger Margaret Thatcher, Alexandra Roach, who is basically straight out of drama school.
Yeah.
So this is kind of her first role.
Not bad.
Not bad.
So amazing.
I'm playing a younger Meryl.
Yeah, not even, I get to play younger
Meryl.
Not
America's Dad. I'm playing a younger Meryl.
I'm playing young Meryl. Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher.
I know, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's
not a bad first role. Not a bad first
role at all. She's excellent in the film.
And then you got Jim Broadbent to play against.
Now, yeah, this for me is a revelation, too, because I think if you remember any history with Margaret Thatcher, and I sort of remember the headlines and stuff when I was in Australia, poor old Dennis Thatcher.
Oh, yeah.
He got such a lampooning in the press. You saw him as this idiot, this buffoon, this guy that had, you know, really was such a wimp. And yeah. I love the fact that you've got Jim Broadbent bringing so much humanity and so much depth to Dennis Thatcher.
Yes,
and for me, I found that even more of a revelation than humanizing Margaret Thatcher in this.
I did too.
Yeah, I loved seeing Dennis Thatcher.
He just loved her.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was so important, you know, and I sort of brought how important this relationship was to Margaret Thatcher. He wasn't just the buffoon in the back that she could dominate and just tell what to do. The fact is their relationship was really important, and, you know, and the fact is, you know, she's found it so hard to accept his loss because he was so key to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what the beautiful kind of love story is in this as well.
I saw a great quote that was talking about his portrayal and saying how he really was the 21st century man and way before his time. And it warmed my heart because my information of Margaret Thatcher leading into the movie was from studying like middle school and sort of her harsh political tones, and to see the he brought a real human, soft, beautiful side of what their relationship was, and it's so easy for the public and people, especially with women, to just demonize them and make them these hard, horrible people because they're powerful and they've come about.
They're shrill.
And of course, because she's powerful, he must be weak.
That's what they did in the movie. I'm not agreeing.
It's so great to see that that's how they presented him to the audience.
Yeah.
And he was so, it was so joyful. It was so kind and sweet part of the movie. I appreciate it.
And his characterization helps you understand her even better, I think.
I think so. I think that really is the thing that, like I said, humanizes Margaret Thatcher to this kind of image that we had of her as this really hard woman that, you know, had no soft side to her as well at all.
And still called her to task on a few things, which is like, great. Love that. Okay, we have to talk a little bit about Phyllida Law.
Yes.
Because she's the director. She took on this project after, you know, I didn't really read what drew her to it other than the obvious.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, did anybody else read anything about that?
Well, I think she got Abby Morgan's script originally.
That was it? That was the thing?
Yeah, that's what she read.
And then it went
through, basically, you know, she was...
We have to talk about, you know, why they chose this part of it or what we think, that, you know, led to that. Because it could have been easier to tell a more traditional biopic, as you were saying, trying to get all of it in. Or they could have isolated on one incident like the Argentinian thing. But they chose to do it this way, and they chose not to really talk about the politics because they got a lot of heat for not being political.
Yes.
The right thought it was going to be a hatchet job. The left thought it was going to be a chance to bash her, and it was neither, so everybody was unsatisfied.
And then they're still mad. Like,
yeah,
they're still mad.
They're mad as it, and it wasn't even really political, except for the sense that the political statement, if any, she was making was, even today, there are few women in Parliament.
Yeah.
If that's a political statement at all.
It just goes back to point of view.
Yeah.
The story is told just from her point of view. That's it. It's so simple.
It's not even a story about politics. It's about loss.
Yeah.
It's a story about the cost of what that kind of life bears on the people you love and you as yourself. To come, you know, I love the idea because, you know, somebody was, I think it was, the director was talking about how it was Shakespearean in nature.
Yeah,
this
like
woman
a
of humble,
like
a humble, of, yeah. humble origins, the grocery store daughter, or the daughter of a grocery store owner, or whatever it is, and she rises to power, becomes the first female prime minister of Britain, and ends up being a lonely woman suffering from dementia, talking to people who aren't there.
Yeah.
And I just, I mean, the arc of that story. Wow.
Yeah.
When you look at it like that and take it on that, on those merits, rather than having it be a political story of what, or have the story be what you want it to be, but just take it on the story that it presents, it's a totally different experience.
Yeah.
It's funny. I didn't see her as lonely. That didn't stick
really?
Out to me as much. No, I saw her as somebody who was suffering with dementia.
Hmm.
But I didn't... There's... At the end of the movie... Well, actually, at the beginning of the movie, she says, "I will not wash a teacup."
Yeah.
And then at the end, she's so peaceful in that act of watching a teacup. I didn't... I felt some content in that.
I don't disagree. I just think there were moments in the movie for me that I felt that not only was she lonely, I felt her solitude.
But I think it's also interesting, you know, if you compare it to past prime ministers, really don't have, you know, past leaders, like a past prime minister in the UK does not have the reverence that past presidents, say, have in this country.
Right.
You know, they almost just become commoners
again.
They
go back to regular life.
Yeah, they go back to regular life. You know, I think that's really interesting. I mean, you couldn't see a Clinton or a Bush kind of in a little grocery store looking at milk.
Welcome.
Hi. Why don't you scoot on over as much as you can. Scoot on over. There you go. Bring that mic forward. And please introduce yourself. And
I am Christine Rucker with Enza Essentials by Rucker MD. Skincare line. I know you're talking about the Iron Lady and Margaret Thatcher.
Yes, we are.
You know, and Meryl Streep. So she's like, you know, endless beauty. Ageless beauty, right?
She's
beautiful.
Beautiful
skin. Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, we at Rucker MD, Enza Essentials, have some great tips for the ladies for the red carpet.
Great.
Wow. Yeah. You know, so.
Always need those.
Yeah, you just have a few days, right? You just got a few days coming up, try to get ready. So a couple things that you can do is maybe sleeping with your head elevated. You know, a couple of pillows. So you're not getting that puppiness around your eyes.
Oh.
Right? Keep it from coming down. Store your eye cream in the refrigerator. So when you're putting that on, it's cooling, it's refreshing to give you that real.
I'm writing these down.
Right? I know.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Where's my pen?
Exactly. Another thing you can do, too, to stay hydrated and have that dewy finish is to sleep with a humidifier a few nights before.
I do that.
Do you? You're so smart. You're so good.
Not in the bed, though, right?
Not in the bed. Okay. Next to the bed.
Next to the bed.
Next to
the
bed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just like the sound of it. But
it does. It gives you that dewy glow. It helps hydrate your lips, you know, for that plumpness, which is wonderful. Another thing, you know, I talked about putting the eye gel in the fridge. Also, your cleanser. If you put your cleanser in the refrigerator, it gives you that refreshed, vibrant, you know, woke look. So, you know, there's lots of different things you can do, you know. Obviously, you'll need to drink water, flush all that stuff out of your system. You know, and another thing, too, with all the lights and the cocktails and all the things going on, it can cause you to be a little flushed.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
We have a wonderful product called Rosacalm. It has willow bark in that that's going to keep your skin calm, and nobody's going to know that you've had a few too many cocktails.
Right?
Those are some great tips. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Please remind everybody.
www.enza.com.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Thank you. Our quick tips.
Yeah, those are great tips. I'm going to use
the fridge. I love it.
I know.
Some of them.
Non-puffiness.
Yeah.
All right. I feel better now.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments in this movie, actually it's not, it's many moments. It's the thread of Shall We Dance? Rodgers and Hammerstein. And it's just,
yes.
It's, I mean, there are many threads in this with the milk and the grocery and the price of things, but there's something just so tangible in the way the director portrays that relationship. And every time that song comes up, for me, those feelings came up. Did that happen with you?
Yeah.
It's such an efficient way to use music in a story. I love it. I love it so much. I also love The King and I. I watch that at least once a year. I
don't
know. Little Yule Brenner, some popcorn.
Learning more of the story as it goes.
Here we go.
Well, I thought one of the really smart things they did was that opening shot of her in the store buying whatever it was, milk or whatever, with nobody attending to her, helpers, no whatever it is, or what are they?
Handlers.
Thank you. That's what
we call them in politics.
No, it is, but it is. But that's what they call them in politics, too.
Like
because it told you right there, this is not going to be the Iron Lady you know.
Yeah.
The one with, you know, big coiffed hair, and it's just not. This is not who that is. We're not telling that story. And that's why I don't understand why people were so angry with it.
I don't either.
They were? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people are really mad at the movie.
Well, I think that a lot of the anger comes from the ones that love Margaret Thatcher, hate the fact that she's portrayed as this kind of incapable older lady, and then the ones that hate Margaret Thatcher hate the fact that she's been so humanized in this film. So
exactly. That's what I mean. The left hated it for one reason, right hated it for another, never the twain and show me. And I just go, but that's why I can't. I go, why did you even think that going in? I mean, I can understand it going in, but as soon as you saw that, you knew it's not going to be a political move. It's just not. They're not.
Yeah, that's not their role.
You know, from the first 5 minutes, you know it's not going to be that kind of movie.
Yeah.
Well, at least they feel something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but I guess she's still such a lightning rod for so many British people, particularly.
And do you know anything about that?
It's just interesting just to put it a little bit in context, which you see in the film. I mean, this time was incredible turmoil. I mean, late 70s, 80s, in the we think we have it bad now.
Yeah, I know. But don't you find the parallels interesting about what's happening now? The austerity measures, the striking, the violence.
That's what's so creepy, that sort of, especially in the UK.
And some people are saying, well, the reason why we're in that situation is because of policies like her. Other people are saying, no, she was in trying to prevent.
One of the smartest things that, but you know, no one really listened to her, was the fact that she did not want the European Union and the Euro.
Right.
But now look at the disaster that's happening with Greece. And, you know, I mean, she predicted all that.
Genius.
And that was actually what kicked her out of Parliament, because basically she would not agree to all that. So a lot of what she predicted was actually pretty smart. But a lot of the policies she put in, I mean, she was a Conservative Party. So,
them very conservative.
No, they're not conservative.
For them,
she was still pro-abortion, she was still pro-gay rights,
conservatism, that's always fascinating.
As Meryl Streep said, she's a feminist whether she believes it or not.
That's what I mean. So conservatism is a different
It's a different beast
meaning. But in terms of, you know, one of the big things that a lot of people still hate her for is the fact that she broke down the unions.
The unions
were so powerful. Powerful. I mean, there was garbage strikes. There was a one-year miners strike.
Yeah.
I mean, the unions controlled so much. And she broke them down, and a lot of people still hate her for that.
Right.
The fact that she, you know, sort of broke this kind of socialist system down that was so entrenched. So that's one of the reasons there's still so much hatred.
Yeah.
But, you know, just even the turmoil, the IRA was, you know, bombing. Yeah. I mean, the things that she went through is just, you know, extraordinary. The era that this woman was in power is just...
Yeah, you know, so as an American, I obviously was aware of her. I knew a fair amount about her, but seeing the movie made me want to go back. In fact, I did a little bit more just to learn a little, because I was fascinated by her, the story that they told. I go, because I knew about the Argentina, I can't remember the boat.
The Falklands War.
Whatever the boat that she sank, the ship, excuse me.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. But I love the argument she made in the movie. Sit back and not, you know, attack after Pearl Harbor. No.
Well, you know, my image of that era is also, you know, punk music. This was kind of the Sex Pistols. This was anarchy in the UK.
Yeah.
This was total turmoil, the late 70s and early 80s.
So many pop songs were specifically targeting her.
Yeah. Exactly. No,
if you look at the soundtrack, if you look at the titles of everything, it's very... advantageous isn't the right word, but it's very political.
Yeah.
The soundtrack in general. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So where do you think the breakdown is, just in terms of the public perception of what the movie is when they go? Because most people I know went with an idea of what it was going to be. You know, sometimes you do that based on the marketing, or sometimes you do it because of history. Mm-hmm. This is a real a person, obviously. So you have some sort of... If you don't have any idea, that's one thing. You go in and you don't know. But if you know anything about it, you probably come in with something. And obviously, I think the Brits did, and that's one reason why they're such... consternation about what was on the screen.
What do you think people had? It was interesting, they were saying when they were casting some of the younger actresses, they didn't even know who Margaret Thatcher was.
Yeah.
I said one actress came in and she only Googled her. So kind of interested, because from people that had, if you went into this movie and didn't know anything about Margaret Thatcher, I kind of...
You think she's not a bad lady?
You think she's not so bad.
Yeah.
No, for sure. But I think Abby Morgan had a great quote that I wish I had looked up real quick. But they were saying about... Obviously, they were arguing about why they were so kind to her, basically, in the movie, and that they'd given her all this. And she said, I think you stop making someone culpable if you make them into a monster.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't agree with most of anything that she did while she was in office. But when they were tackling it, it was important not to make her a monster, because it polarizes and there was no reason for it.
It's too easy to cast them out being, oh, they're just...
She was crazy. She was a monster. She was horrible. But at the same time, I found myself reading other things that are arguing sort of on the other side of it, that... for instance, the people that are saying that it was awful because she is still alive and she has dementia and we're treating her like we treat all the elderly suffering from such conditions. We're treating them as forgotten and there's no respect for her there. There's no, and I was just...
They made a movie out of her. How are you forgetting her?
But at the same time, I thought to myself, here's a woman that had so much power, but so much... She was such an inspiration in so many ways, and just as a woman and having been sort of that great in your lifetime, to already being portrayed as this and sort of in your weaker state, so to speak, I kind of understand why maybe for me, I wondered, wait, did Margaret Thatcher die? And I missed it when I was sort of reading more about what the movie was about. And in seeing it, I did sort of sympathize with those comments because it kind of... Not that people can't be human and that you can't fall from power or leave power and then turn into another life or what have you, but it just kind of, it's unfortunate, I think, for some to see, had she had been so much, and you don't know where she is mentally right now, and just, I understand a little bit out of respect that maybe it
was
a little soon for
that. I also think, I don't think they portrayed her in some bad light.
It's not about bad, it's about weakness, I think.
But here's the thing, but that's where we're all headed. That's why
I think
it's a universal story, which is why it's just so, if it wasn't Margaret Thatcher, if it was just some prime minister that we didn't know, it was a fictional portrayal of somebody, then you'd think it was going to be an amazing story because, wow, they showed the real, the end of things. We showed the frailty we're all going to face.
Yeah.
But because it's a real person, it has a different thing to it. But for me, that's what made it more impactful. A woman of this stature, we're all going to go through it,
that's
even
right.
that. We can't escape it.
Wasn't there a lot of controversy, if I'm right, about Ronald? There was something that they were trying to do a Ronald Reagan thing here as well, and the fact is people didn't want to see what happened to Ronald Reagan.
Right,
exactly. I think that it's almost like we don't
want
to...
They don't want the myth messed
with. They don't want the myth to go. Yeah.
I would hate to say it's very American, but... There is...
You just did.
Almost. There is an epidemic in this country in which we don't like to see things get old.
Yes,
there are a lot of people, when their parents get old, we don't take them in anymore.
No,
we actually just put them away in a home.
Yeah.
And I think the really beautiful thing that this movie does is it forces us to look at one of our big issues. Is how are we taking care of our elderly? What is it that we're doing? And it's not pretty to look at, but I also think that in service to her country, she put herself out there.
Yeah.
And when you put yourself out there to the public in any respect, I think you know that people are going to do things with your image.
Right.
And the other thing,
things you don't control.
The other thing I like, just on with that theme, I mean, how many people dismiss old people when they're walking around?
Of course.
You know, just don't even... And then if you actually sit down with some of these people and learn their stories...
They just want to talk.
Yeah. They have the most amazing stories, but we just dismiss them because we think they're old.
Yeah. And they have the best stories.
Yeah. They have incredible histories, you know? Mm-hmm.
See, and, for me, the movie's more of a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
It's like, look, this is going to happen to all of us.
Yeah.
All of us.
Exactly.
At some point.
Yeah.
And, you know, get your stuff together.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Do it before you die.
I don't know if they could have portrayed her in another way and it have worked. Because they juxtapose her vulnerability to her strength.
Yes.
So then she's a full person for us. We see her when she's vulnerable. We see her when she's strong. And it gives so much shape to her. And she's flawed. And when they're flawed, then we relate to you. Then we love you all the more.
And I think, because of what you were just saying, I think it was courageous to make the film. Because no matter how you make it, somebody's going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Even if you made a political one, if it wasn't harsh enough, if they didn't do enough of a hatchet job, you'd be pissed off. They did too much of one. So no one was ever going to be satisfied that way. So they decide to make a human story and get, like, and you know they're going to get messed with that one. So ultimately, and it's not pretty to look at in the sense that it's somebody who's getting old, and that's why I think it's courageous, which is what I appreciated about it. I in fact thought it was beautiful. My mother suffered from dementia, so I understand that story, and I didn't find that. I found the beauty in that because. Well, for many reasons, but that for me was, I understood those moments, I'd been there at those moments, and I found them beautiful and tragic at the same time. That was for me.
No, I do feel it's an art film, especially because of, and I guess we'll get to it now, the color schemes that they're using, because they're doing it from her perspective, from her mind that is suffering from dementia. We have all these blues, these bright blues and grays, and it does look surreal. It's saying, no, this isn't actual life. This is life as my mind perceives it. And so that lets us know it's a skewed reality. We have another vendor.
Yes.
Oh, what a guest.
Devorah, Livin Jewels.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Get yourself right up to the mic. Come on in here. Please introduce yourself and tell us what you're...
I'm Devorah Libin.
Uh-huh.
Devorah Libin Jewels.
Nice.
Lovely.
And so what are you providing?
Excuse me?
And what are you providing? What kind of jewelry are you providing?
Well, everything is handmade in New York.
Oh,
and it's a lot of skulls and spikes and pave bees.
Uh-huh.
Little rocker chic.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Are you wearing any that we can see?
I am.
Ah, there we go.
Put it out.
I'm wearing a lot.
Nice.
Yeah.
And the neon color, those are
the neon is huge right now.
Yes.
It's big for summer, but I personally think the worse the weather, the brighter the colors should be.
I completely agree.
I mean, seasonal affective disorder.
Never going to happen around
you. Bring on the DLJ.
Yeah. Okay.
I love it. It matches our logo right now.
It does.
It does. It's your hair.
It's convenient. It works
very
well. And I'm right next door to you. So.
Yes. Right around the corner there.
So well.
Okay. Do you have any ideas about some trends maybe that are coming on the red carpet with jewelry?
Well, I see a lot of neon colors. Neon is huge right now. So I think the brighter, the better. Stacking the bracelets. It's a lot of fun.
Can you imagine any way that they can blend those neons in their red carpet gear for the Oscars on Sunday?
Well, what's great about my bracelets is that you can mix them with the current jewelry that you already have. So if you have, you know, a gold bangle bracelet or whatever, mix it up. Just stack them all on.
All right. Sounds good.
Sorry.
Oh. To hear that. All right, now where can we find your jewelry if we're out?
You can find the jewelry at www.devorahlibinjewels.com.
Okay, fantastic. Fantastic.
That'd be wonderful.
You'll be looking that up right away. Now, we're here talking about Iron Lady. Were you able to see that this year?
I was not.
Are you a Meryl Streep fan?
Of course.
Okay.
I'd like to see some of those on Meryl.
I know. I was just going to suggest that.
I agree.
What would you like to see her in?
I think she should wear.
She has definitely.
She's really
text,
into the neon skull. Thing.
Yeah,
she should
see that.
Because she has a very simple style. She could throw in some extra jazz.
She's classic. She could wear it,
throw it off.
And it would be fine.
For sure.
No problem.
Sure. All right. Well,
we want to thank you so much for stopping by and gracing our table. Let it remind everyone one more time where you're from.
One more time, where are you from and
New
where
York.
We find it.
No.
Where can we find it?
Devorah Libin Jewels.
There you go.
And we can find it
at DevorahLibinJewels.com.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
We were talking about... Was it lighting or color? I can't remember.
Color. I was talking about color.
Colors.
One of the things I found fascinating in the research is they used the blues. You know, she always wore
everywhere.
Blues.
Everywhere. Yes. That's why I'm in my blue.
I'm not thinking about the pearls.
Yeah.
That she
the pearls.
I love that part.
She refused to take off the pearls.
That was
you can take the hat, but I'm kidding.
You can take the pearls. Yes. That was great. And even just wasn't not so off the color thing, but even just the interesting how she the voice was trained, and I mean you know how she took that lower register to sound more.
Which
powerful.
Is exactly what we do here. You know,
and her lung capacity.
Get our politicos to go through their little
Goodness.
Grooming process to make them palatable.
Yeah.
So I thought that was fascinating.
I would love to sit in on one of those sessions.
Yes.
I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see how that works.
Tuck your head down, not too far. You don't want to look like you're looking your nose at everybody.
Because you know the transformation, I think, is also a good thing to remember. Is that you know she was the daughter of a grocer.
Yeah.
And I mean, class in the UK
was still
far more a barrier. And actually, Margaret Thatcher felt that she achieved more by crossing classes than she did by as a woman getting into politics. Because to be from a lower class like that and to break through was really astounding for someone.
Which is ironic because by breaking the unions as much as she did, she kind of shrunk the middle class.
You know?
But it was, that was a political statement in and of itself for her to join the, be a member of parliament and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
An impressive one. Very, very
I'm curious on a personal level because Margaret Thatcher had a long-term relationship. She was able to, I'm wondering the effects of that. in comparison to Meryl Streep, she is the greatest actress, the greatest living actress. She also has something like a 30-year relationship with her husband. Mm-hmm. And those are the questions, if I got to sit down with her, I would like to ask. Because Hollywood is so flippant at times.
Yes.
One relationship, the next. But you look at the span of her career and you're like, my goodness, you've made so many fantastic films and played so many beautiful roles. How much is this attributed to the emotional stability in your relationship?
Yeah. Or vice versa. How much does that stability, feed her art?
Yes.
And I'm sure living in Hollywood is... Not living in Hollywood has helped.
Has helped. Because you get to experience real people.
Catherine, the next time you get to interview her, can you ask that for me?
Of course.
Okay.
One of the things that I do remember her saying, which I kind of liked, she was saying that, she related a little bit as a mother, because she said, with Margaret Thatcher, she had to make tough decisions.
Right.
And sometimes that doesn't make you very popular. Right. And as a mother, you have to do the same thing.
Yeah.
You have to make tough decisions and you're not very popular, but you have to think in the long run, is this the right thing to do?
I thought that's fascinating, because they showed that one scene where she has to leave the house and she drives away and the little girl's crying.
Yes.
So there's that. And I'm wondering, because I couldn't figure this out. I'd love your feedback on this. Was she doing it because, did she make those decisions for the country because it was in the best interest of the country? And or how much of it was because it was for her? You know what I mean? I couldn't, as opposed to the mother where you're doing it for the better good of your child.
Right.
Hopefully.
Right. You're saying why did Margaret Thatcher make kinds of decisions?
Because she's very ambitious.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how much of it, there's that delicate play between I'm ambitious and I think I'm the best person for this job and I can fix the country and I want to be prime minister.
Yeah.
So how much of that?
I couldn't figure that out. Whatever decision she made, I felt that they said she was a very instinctive politician. I think she was very much about, I think whatever decisions she was making, she thought were the best decisions for
the country
in a motherly way.
Right.
Strangely, in a motherly way.
Everybody has always said whatever decision she made, it comes from a true conviction, meaning her conviction. It's not as much politically motivated as, no, I believe this to be true.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know her personally, so who knows?
Don't know her personally either, but based on the film, I would guess that that's how, from a personal perspective, like she was convicted in everything that she believed.
Ladies,
were
you at all? As women, you see, she's the first prime minister of Britain.
The only one.
Was that cool? The only one. Yeah. Yeah, right on. Why don't we have more yet?
We just got our first prime minister a couple of years ago in Australia. First female prime minister in Australia. Right.
You got Angela Merkel in Germany. So.
Yeah, but I mean,
well, she's on her.
Yeah, and I mean, but the thing is too, you've got to remember, this is the 70s too, which was even more remarkable.
Exactly.
Because women were not, to get in power in the 70s, and yet the awful thing is things haven't changed that much.
Isn't it strange? We don't have anybody else.
America, this is crazy,
And we haven't done there yet.
No.
At the same time, you look at this film as an example of, we are moving forward. The writer is female. The director
in terms
is
of filmmaking, It's a,
We have it's
certainly, well, it's always been that way. I think, in my estimation, art has always been ahead of politics.
I don't know enough about politics, so I can't comment.
Well,
politics
I think you've got to remember, Meryl Streep very much supports women, too, and I like that. She supports women in the arts. I mean, she's working with female directors, female writers.
She also had a female editor.
I think that's really important.
I think so.
And cinematographer. Yeah, female cinematographer.
It's very female-heavy, and it's wonderful.
I know, which is great. It's a real sort of feminist statement anyway, the fact that this was so many women made this movie.
I think that's fascinating, too, because I came across a lot of criticism saying that the film catered too much to a female cliche dealing with Margaret Thatcher. And even down to the scene you were mentioning earlier about her driving away from the children and the women, the children chasing her, and who is coming up with this stuff? Because these are women that have written it and sympathized with it and came up with it, and I don't see any woman that I know personally in a working environment that
doesn't have
that
to deal with.
Doesn't have that fear,
ring as cliche at all.
So to say that it's cliche, I was just shocked and amazed that New York Times mentioned that as a cliche.
Really?
And I was like,
I don't know what woman doesn't have to deal with
what's
that.
What's the matter with you people? You men. Yeah. What's wrong with you men?
Whoa.
I shouldn't say that.
It took a turn.
New York Times quote.
No. Yeah.
But women are under the microscope, they get more criticism that men would never get.
you know. Still, in 2012. Why is that John Comerford?
Well, I don't know.
A perfect example would be what's happening currently with women's reproductive rights.
No comment on that.
Right.
I just watched the debates last night.
We better move on.
So, one of the things I liked was the way it was shot. And, you know, when they, you know, like, for instance, I just loved her the first time she goes into Parliament.
Yeah.
I thought that the set was great. And then just her, all those, I mean, all those, I don't know. Is the word pompous old men, right? Is that are those the right words?
That's what I felt.
Privileged.
Privileged?
Privileged. Yeah. Right, man. Just a visual of that was stunning. Now, I know that, I think you had mentioned already that there were females in Parliament, Parliament at the time.
Not from her point of view.
So, yeah.
And then just the other interesting point, just about point of view to it. The fact is, those speeches.
Yeah.
Those are actually paraphrased speeches of Margaret Thatcher because they weren't that you can. Margaret Thatcher actually owned all her speeches.
Oh. Wow.
So that's brilliant.
So they are not accurate speeches. They're paraphrased because you have to get Margaret Thatcher's permission to use them verbatim.
And the other thing,
and they weren't allowed
that's
to.
Awesome.
That's great. And the other thing that was so fascinating about her as a politician and a strategist, is she learned that she had to develop a good lung capacity, so that when she's answering questions, there was never a pause for the interviewer to ask another question.
Well, that brings up just another point that Margaret
Thatcher like scored for 6 minutes.
I'm going to try
just,
that
and
argument.
Just keep going, and the.
I love that.
And by the time you get a chance, you forget.
You don't even know. So
you're basically filibustering an interviewer.
It's awesome.
Exactly. But Meryl Streep said that one of her inspirations was this interview she heard the BBC do with Margaret Thatcher.
Right.
And she said there was like 7 minutes of no break.
Yeah.
That Margaret Thatcher just kept talking. So the interviewer didn't even have a chance to interject.
Nobody can keep up that. Nobody can keep that up.
And I know someone that, when I'm interviewing somebody, you're always waiting. You should get a lot of breaks.
Right.
So if someone's kind of going on and on and on about some boring thing that you don't want them to keep talking about.
And how do you ask a follow-up on a seven-minute response?
You get in, you interject.
Yeah.
But if you had Margaret Thatcher, you'd be there going,
you're trying not to cut her off.
I would just go, hey, lock it up, Margie. And then, no, wouldn't do that?
No,
okay.
Not that Margie.
But it's impressive. Just that she had the presence of mind to go, you know what?
Yeah.
I think not only should I do this, I'll develop the capacity to do it and then do it.
Yeah, I know.
Who thinks of that?
Yeah, incredible.
Intelligence.
Yeah.
How do you feel about how they incorporated actual footage into the film?
I think they did it very well, actually.
Yeah.
Because I think it gives you enough key points, especially if you're not aware of all what happened, like with the IRA and, I think it was actually well integrated.
And I have to say, I really appreciated the editing because it was very sparse and the whole thing was very clean. Nothing was cluttering it. It really didn't get in the way at all. I just like that because it really let you just be with her rather than, oh, wow, wasn't that cool or interesting. They just, a lot of restraint, a lot of confidence and courage just to let it be and, not too fussy with it. And I just really liked that. I enjoyed that. It's Elliot Davis, by the way.
The moment that she leaves Downing Street and she's going down the stairs and the blue transforms into the red and she's doing it so courageously and with grace. Is the red because it's a transformation, because she's bleeding inside, but on the exterior she's holding it steady? What is the red all of a sudden? We haven't seen red the entire film until that moment.
Is it the contrast?
That's a really good question.
That's a great question. I got nothing.
I kept looking it up.
Probably nothing, but I mean, she was so against. Well, just it's funny because red represents communism, and that's the reason she was called Iron Lady.
The communists called her that.
Because the Russians called her that because she was so
iron against communism.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's probably
I don't know. Maybe it was a nod to that.
It might just because they have the red roses in her feet, and they give her the radio.
Yeah.
And I love that. What does she say in that moment? She says it's a useful gift.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very useful gift.
Yeah. Very practical as always. Yeah. One must have something to do.
Yes.
But,
not be.
I know.
It has to be one of my favorite scenes.
I mean, that feeling too when you've just you're so busy and you're in this position, and yeah, you're right. Suddenly what do you do with your time? What do you do with yourself?
Huh? I think a lot of people feel that going into retirement.
How awful that sort of feeling of...
Oh, we have a guest.
Yes.
Nathalia Ramos. Hello, welcome.
Guys, very special, very, very special. This is not only an unbelievable actress, but she's my best friend, Nathalia Ramos. She's the lead on Nickelodeon show House of Anubis. She was in Bratz. She's all over the place. So talk to her. She loves Iron Lady. Very politically involved. Get her involved in the conversation.
All right. Well, nice to try her.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Amazing.
So you enjoyed the movie?
Okay, that's Iron Lady is absolutely my Oscar pick for the year. Absolutely.
Really? Why did you love it so much?
I'm a huge Meryl Streep fan. I think from an acting perspective, she transformed herself into this part like no other. If you put together a photo of Margaret Thatcher and Meryl, it's incredible. The resemblance is just striking. And she also played her in two different like ages of her life, which I found really remarkable as well. Plus, I'm very into politics.
Oh, so, did you know much about Margaret Thatcher coming into this?
I did. I go to USC with Roxy. I'm a political science major. And I also filmed House of Anubis in England. So I lived there for 6 months. So I do know a little bit about English.
So do you know about the feelings about this movie in Britain? Have you heard anything from friends that you know?
I actually do. I made a comment once about Margaret Thatcher and how I was very excited to see the film. And ironically enough, I lived in Liverpool, which is in the north of England.
Right.
And the northerners in England, I realized, have a very different perspective than the southerners. And a lot of the Liverpool, for example, is a very working class city and lots of blue collar folk. And a lot of them did lose their jobs because of many policies that Thatcher made.
Yeah.
So there is some sort of hostility or resentment towards her government. I happen to be more of a conservative in my political views. So personally, I instantly gravitated towards her and I liked her very much as a leader. But living in Liverpool, I got a completely different perspective and I saw some of the negative aspects of her government as well.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing how she still is so thought of, and you know, whether people blame her or look at her. It's incredible that all these years later that she's still sort of so much in the mind there.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
She had such an impact, and I think one of the most impactful scenes in the film that really resonated with me, there's this one scene where they do a top shot of Parliament and everyone walking into the Houses of Parliament, and all you see is just suits, and then this one blue hat, like a woman suit, walking through with all of these men. And I thought that was just such a symbolic gesture, form of like just showing what she represented and how she had to struggle and all the things that she had to overcome to get to where she was. I think it's really remarkable.
Well, you came in it with some information about Margaret Thatcher. How do you feel about how the filmmakers handled the story and not making it very political, actually?
Yeah, I thought they did a very, very good job because it appealed to so many different types of people. So you didn't really need to know much about Margaret Thatcher or politics. And they took something that could possibly be boring and they made it really interesting, kind of like The Social Network. I feel like it could potentially be a really boring story.
Like reading
about
a biography or a history lesson.
Exactly,
or something like that.
But the writers were so brilliant in Social Network that they made it they turned a court case into something that was so interesting. And they did that with this movie as well. They made something, you know, that you don't... It really extended to all different types of demographics and different types of interests, and it was just a great story more than
so anything. Even though you appreciated her political views and policies, perhaps, did you enjoy seeing a personal side to her? Does that change your view of her?
It was interesting to see a personal side of her. And then from as a politician, I looked at it in one way. And then also as an actress, I looked at it another way. And I think the acting overshadowed the politics. Meryl is so brilliant. All the supporting actors in the film and the script writing and the cinematography. It was just such a well-made film. And it did have a subliminal message underneath. And it did have...
What was that? Wait.
What do you think
It was so subliminal. I don't know what it is. Come on, after Buzz exclusive. Let's go.
Well, just the message about politics, which can be a very like touchy subject, and people don't really want to go there. But whether you're interested in politics or not, it was just an overall like a great film. So I loved it.
Big fan.
Yeah. Big fan. But how can you not? Meryl Streep, I mean, she can do no wrong.
Apparently not.
Going to
get another Oscar.
I hope so.
What? What did you say?
I didn't say it.
Okay. Sure, I mean, she can do no wrong, really? I mean, Meryl can do no wrong? Death Becomes Her, really? No wrong?
I'm kidding. It's amazing.
It's the only
Susie
one I thought of. I was going to use Silkwood, but I knew that wouldn't work.
I'm
just kidding.
Yeah.
I like the movie. I was just kidding.
Good.
What are you headed to next? Meaning, what's your next thing that you, anything you want to promote, anything you're doing, anything?
Well, right now my show House of Anubis is on Nickelodeon every night at 7 o'clock. Uh-huh. And it's about to premiere internationally.
Nice.
So
nice.
I'm excited.
And you manage that with school.
Overachiever.
It's difficult for sure. I had to take a semester off school to go film the show, and I was filming for 6 months. I came back on Thursday night and was back in class Friday morning, so just right back at it. And it is challenging, but I want to inspire and motivate other kids to stay in school and pursue their dreams. But I want to really stress the importance of getting an education and staying in school. So I hope that what I do, I want to kind of set just like be a good, I don't want to say role model, but just like inspire.
No, you are.
But no, they inspire other people that like, you know, when I was 15, I thought, no way I'm never going to college because there's no way I can do both. But I want to show people that you can.
That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Oh.
That is so great. Well, just because we're talking about Meryl and she's taken on this like historical, amazing figure, is there anyone as an actress that has inspired you that you could see yourself and want to play in the future?
Actors that have inspired me or just anyone?
Any historical figure that has inspired you that you would like to be a part of the project?
Who I would love to play Grace Kelly. I mean, I know there hasn't been a big film yet about her. I mean, everyone's doing the Marilyn ones now. And Audrey Hepburn is amazing, but she's a brunette.
Well, why Grace Kelly and Audrey? Just give me a little bit.
I think that what they... I can't believe, by the way, I just said the brunette because I forgot that I am...
Yeah. No, that's okay.
We were confused for a second. That's all right.
We'll fix it in post.
I'm blonde. I've been a blonde my whole life.
Oh, really?
I just dyed my hair. So I've always said I want to play Grace Kelly, but now I probably could play Audrey, right?
Yeah.
That's so funny. I totally forgot that I'm not blonde anymore. Anyway, so sorry, what was the question?
No problem. I was just saying, why particularly Audrey or Grace Kelly?
I think I always make a joke about Grace Kelly that I want to be an actress turned princess, and that's just a joke that I used to make on set. But it's more so that she was an actress and she had an amazing career as an actress, but then she did other things. She had she committed herself to a life of philanthropy and she was very involved in the political realm as well. Just like Evita is another one from Argentina. She became a very like active political spokeswoman and very involved in philanthropy. And I would love to one day combine my love of politics for my love of acting and do something along those lines. So they really inspire me.
Thank you very much. Those are fantastic reasons. They're both fantastic. A fantastic job at portraying.
Oh, gosh. That would be amazing.
Okay. All right. Well, are you... So, for your picks for Oscars, best actress?
Meryl, yes.
Of course. Do you have a best actor pick?
I haven't seen all of them yet. SAG sent me all the films, so I need to finish watching them. So I don't want to make a pick until I've seen all of them.
I think that's fair.
That is fair. Do your homework first.
Yeah.
Nah, come on, just say it.
Just throw
something out there. You don't have to have anything behind it.
I think that's all the time we have
right now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in for another AfterBuzz podcast. On behalf of the panel here, we want to thank everyone coming to you live from the Kari Feinstein Oscar-style gift lounge, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.